Welcome to the Strangers and Aliens podcast.
Strangers.
Hello, and welcome back to the Strangers and Aliens podcast. And once more, we're doing a short episode just because of a sort of special event, I guess, if you are a geek, that happened this week. And so this is our bonus second mini episode. It's a Christmas bonus. You're getting your Christmas bonus early. but this is just two of the sci-fi guys. I'm Ben Avery, and here also is Steve McDonald. Say hello, everybody. Steve.
Hi, everybody.
There we go.
Happy Christmas.
I was really expecting you to do the joke, man.
Which one?
I said, say hello, Steve, and you...
Oh, yeah.
You just totally skipped over that.
I thought that perhaps people would be rolling their eyes already before I even said anything, so I figured I'd, you know, break it up by not doing it, and maybe...
And then I just went ahead and put a signpost on it and said,
hey, hello, look. Steve.
All right. Well, so if you are any kind of geek at all, which might explain why Dr. Jace isn't here, since he takes issue to being called a geek, but...
he's a geek.
Well, we're working with him on admitting it, though. So, yeah, this week was the week that we had the Hobbit trailer come to us via the internet. And
oh, wonderful internet. What yes. wonders do you hold?
And well, one of the wonders it held was the Hobbit trailer. And so here we are, Steve and I, talking about a trailer. We're not just, I mean, that's what we're talking about.
And not just any trailer. This is a trailer for a movie that's going to be coming out a year from now.
That's true. But we're not going to just talk about the trailer. So if you're worried about us, you know, sitting down and just like spending a half hour talking about a 2-minute clip of film, that's not our intention. We also wanted to take the time maybe to look, you know, back. I do find it interesting. We're looking forward to a movie that takes place before a movie that we're going to be looking backward at.
It's like 1998 all over again.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, this is exciting. I really, first of all, Steve, I've never actually, you know, heard you talk about this. I know you like Lord of the Rings. I know you like mm-hmm. Tolkien. I don't know how you feel about the original movies. I shouldn't say the original movies, the trilogy of Lord of the Rings, though. I don't know. What do you like? Do you like them?
Original trilogy? What?
The trilogy of Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings. Not the right. original animated films from the 70s, which is a whole other thing that if we have time in the 30 minutes, we'll get to.
Which but, they absolutely rock, by the way. Those early 1970s cartoons, they just absolutely rock. So just okay, go back so and watch them.
Sing I guess songs, we are going to get to them.
Sing the songs, live the life, okay? If I just need a 5-second plug for them, just go and do it. It's worth your time if you love the stuff. And if you don't, then you're just going to be annoyed, but you're going to have all this fun stuff to make fun of. So it's good both ends.
I really don't think there's too much to make fun of, though.
Oh, the greatest adventure oh. is all yours to take.
I thought we agreed no singing.
I could go on.
although I did sing last episode. But yeah, no, I
see what happens.
I know what you're saying about that, but I'm really excited. We're reading The Hobbit right now with my kids. I'm really excited to show them the cartoon. I don't know how well they're gonna take it.
When I was a kid, the cartoon was very influential in. I mean, it was sort of like that in Star Wars at the time when they came out relatively the same time, and I had the album. You know, the record album for Star Wars, the double album for the music, and I would play that. And then I would have the record album for The Hobbit, and it had the story and all the songs and stuff. And then I would play that over and over again. But the original trilogy, I'm conflicted because I really wish that in some way, and he could have done this because it was right on the cusp.
Okay, we're back to Peter Jackson now, right?
Peter Jackson, yeah. Right on the cusp of, you know, having all this bonus information, bonus material, and bonus, all this bonus stuff. And he could have said, okay, here's my script. Here's the shooting script. We're going to do it in, you know, 3.5 hours for each movie, roughly. I'm not making fun of it. It's just, you know, that's how long it was. And, you know, that's the shooting script. That's what you're going to see in the theaters. now we're going to go back and just shoot it scene for scene from the book. And just have, you know, when after we put out the first version, then we put out the extended version, then we put out the one with the additional clips, then we put out the double monkey dragon version.
They only
then we put
did
out
two versions.
However many they put out. It would be really cool if they had said, okay, now here's one that goes to the actual script of the book. You know, the actual people are saying the actual stuff. Tom Bombadil's in there. The scourging of the Shire at the end and all this stuff.
What you're suggesting is impossible. I mean, it's impossible. I don't care how much money you have.
The thing is, he could have done it.
No, he couldn't have.
He could have. At the time, he could have done it. If he really wanted to, and if the other people were on board for it,
he would have had to have done it up front. Like, that's the movie you would have gotten. He couldn't have done it afterward. And, like, because you're talking about total reshoot of all three movies.
Yeah, reshoots of some things. It's another reshoot of the entire thing, because a lot of the regular stuff would still be there, the pacing shots and all that stuff. It could all stay the same, except for there would be some things. Some of the scenes could actually stay the same, and then just different people saying different things, whatever. Just, hey, okay, guys, yeah, that was a perfect take. Now do it one more time, and you say this, and you say that. And I mean, just could have done it.
So your issue with it is the script, then?
But it's...
That it deviates from the original?
But like I said, I'm conflicted because the movies as they are were so well done. You know? I mean, they were just... For what we got, it's sort of like, well, you know, it's his version of it, which is anytime you get a book on screen, it's someone else's version of it. And I'm just that type of person where I just want to see the actual book on the screen.
Yeah, yeah.
But it could be worse. I mean, it could be like... I don't know, like that new Edgar Allan Poe movie that's coming out called The Raven, which just completely takes, you know, his writings and casts it in this fictional universe where Edgar Allan Poe is solving crimes and things like that. It could be...
I have not heard anything about that. And
it's called The Raven.
It's either going to be amazing or... Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be anything spectacular, but... I mean, it could have been that type of a thing where it's sort of like his version of the Lord of the Rings, and, you know, they could all have superpowers and all. I mean, it could have been so much worse. He kept the heart of it, and I think that was one of the important things. You could tell that he loved the thing. So when I started watching the movie, Fellowship of the Rings, just to give you some idea, I went in sort of skeptically because I wanted it to be good, but... It started, and I didn't like some of the things he was doing with some of the shots, like the extreme close-ups, you know, and some of the shots were, it was just sort of like, I don't know, I can't really explain it, but there were certain things where it was a little too kitschy, you know, like the firework scene where they accidentally were, you know, doing stuff with the fireworks and stuff, and it's all stuff that could have happened, you know, it's not much of a big deal, but to me it sort of set the first, like, maybe half of the movie off a little bit. And I was sort of like sitting, you know, 2 hours into the movie and like, all right, well, I'm here. I'm not going to walk out on it. I'll see it to the end. And then the Balrog steps around the corner. And it's smoke and it's fire and it's giant and it's hideous. And it right there, I said, okay, I'm sold.
It took you that long to get sold on the movie?
It took me that long to get sold on the movie, yes.
That's amazing. I mean, considering, you know, you've got Gandalf, you've got Sir Ian McKellen playing Gandalf, who's just, he makes it. I mean, it's his, he takes that role and says, okay, I'm it. And then you have all these other guys, you know, that just, the performances and the visuals and I'm wondering, is it because of the source material that it took you that long? Is it because of the deviation from the source material?
It could have been. I think, you know, when I was watching the beginning and I was like, well, at least, you know, maybe they'll get the Tom Bombadil stuff in there. Because I think it's fun. I think it's light.
That was something that I was disappointed.
Yeah. It was not in there. They didn't. And that just sort of like, and then it went into Lothlorien, I think it was, or... No, the first stop is Rivendell, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, just the beautiful way that was taken from the script and put on the screen, that was nice. But, you know, there was just certain things where I could go back and point them out, but at this point, it just sort of, it would be picayune. You know? It wouldn't really serve any purpose. Because ultimately, at the end, I was very pleased with the movies. We have them in the collection. We show them to the kids.
I have to say, I enjoyed all three movies. There were some things like the Tom Bombadil that was disappointing not to see him there. He's a very fun part of the books. Mm-hmm. The other thing I was disappointed about was the return to Hobbiton at mm-hmm. the end of the last movie, where he, you know, they took out that whole huge cool. section of the book, which is important to Frodo's story,
right?
You know, because that's basically saying, you know, you when you come back, you know, after you've been on this adventure where you've seen the world and you've seen evil, when you return home, you can't return home and be innocent again.
Right.
And that's an important part to the story. But overall, I mean, visually, this stuff looked like the way I pictured it in my head. That's the biggest thing about this is, as you know, with all of the creatures and with all of the buildings and the cities and the, and all that, it's not exactly as I pictured it in my head, but it's so close that it just, I really love the way that they took the book and visualized it and made it come to life. And
see, it was better for me in some ways, because when I think of the old cartoons from the 70s, when I think of
that's another thing is unfortunately, for a long time I wasn't able to read The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings without seeing that animated, you know, Bilbo style
of
character design. That...
But when you think of that, and when you think of, for me, one of the things was I have the BBC version on audio,
mm-hmm.
so I could listen to it in the car. It's 13 hours long, so it's about as long as the movies are. But when I pictured things in my head, you know, for instance, the Balrog, the reason, I think one of the reasons why the Balrog set it off for me, because I had that vision of, you know, maybe an 8 foot tall guy, black, maybe his head is burning or something like that. And the audio version, as good as it was, it didn't knock that out of the ballpark. It didn't give you the sense of this awesome demon thing. And as soon as it steps around the corner and you realize, you know, I mean, even the evil creatures that are all surrounding them and crawling the wall, they run away. You know, that I think that's one of the reasons why that set it off so much for me, because I was expecting, you know, a guy in a black skin suit or something to walk out, and to have that come out instead was just, and he's, you know, he opens up his mouth and he's bellowing this furnace.
I mean, it's just overwhelming in a lot of ways. And, So we're on the same page, I guess, mostly that we like the Peter Jackson's trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's move on then. Let's look at this trailer that they showed of The Hobbit, which is the first of two films directed by Peter Jackson. It was going to be directed by, I'm going to mess up his name. Guillermo del Toro.
Del Toro.
I have to say, when I heard that Peter Jackson wasn't going to be directing The Hobbit, I was disappointed. And then when I heard that it was going to be del Toro, I was happy again, because I love his visual flair. I haven't seen Mimic, but I have seen Hellboy 1 and 2 and Pan's Labyrinth, and he just does amazing things with his visuals, and I love the way he uses practical effects. He uses puppets instead of CGI
in
a lot of places and stuff like that. So he's a visual director, and I just, okay, I'm cool with it.
Right.
Then when I heard he wasn't going to do it, I was disappointed again until I found out that it was going to be Peter Jackson again. And so we get this trailer, came out, what, a day or two ago?
Something like that.
And I'm watching it, and I don't know about you, Steve, but I'm thinking, this looks like it. I mean, this looks like we're just stepping right back into a world that we were comfortable in The Lord of the Rings. I'm looking forward to this movie a
lot. Can I hit a couple of sort of negatives before we get into positives? And we can talk about those negatives and maybe even bring them into the positive realm.
All right.
The dwarves look a little plastic and they look a little cartoonish.
I don't know about the cartoonish. I see what you're saying about the plastic. I hadn't thought about that. I don't know if that's a makeup thing or what.
It could be. And it could be something where they're going to, you know, ease it out in post and make it look more, you know, less like they have rubber masks on or something like that.
Yeah.
And when they're introducing them, you know, the one has, you know, falls on a table or something like that. It looks a little bit like, and this is one of the problems I had with the trilogy. Gimli is a fantastic literary character. Okay. He does what he's supposed to do. He changes over the course of the trilogy. He's an elf hater. And by the end, he's standing next to an elf, happy to die next to an elf.
Uh-huh.
You know, in the films, he's a great fighter, but he's going to get drunk under the table, you know, by the elf who can drink more than him. And, you know, throw me over here. Don't tell the elf, you know, that someone picked him up and threw him. And, you know, it's just they made him more the comic relief.
Absolutely, he was the comic relief. Yes,
I did not like that. I thought it was. Can I use the word racist? I mean,
I don't know if you can use it for imaginary terms, but
I don't know. But that's something
I've heard people say. You know, Dr. McCoy was a racist because based on the way he talks about Vulcans.
Right. Yeah.
But I don't know if you could say the writers are racist because of the way they talk about Vulcans. I think it's in the context of the story.
Oh, so. Obviously, yes, yes. But the it portrayed the dwarf, the only dwarf that we saw, as just goofy and silly. And although he's a great fighter, you know, here's, you know, some other silly dopey stuff that he does as well. And no one else does. Well, I guess the hobbits do, but they're supposed to do that. They're light and energetic and dancing on tables and stuff, and you get that. So why do we have to have it in Gimli? And seeing the dwarfs, which, I mean, admittedly, in the cartoon version, if you go back and watch it, which I don't know if you will or not, they are cartoony. But the thing is, everything is cartoony. It's a cartoon.
Yeah, but, you know, they're written that way too, though.
Yeah.
I mean, they are. And
yeah.
I don't think that's straying too far away. I mean, they're written to be happy-go-lucky Viking warriors. You know, they're nice Vikings.
My hope is that they don't take Thorin and make him as goofy as they made Gimli. Because if they can take Thorin and cast him sort of in the role of not a villain, but someone who needs to get a job done and may need to sacrifice some things along the way that, you know, other people might not, including, you know, if the hobbit dies, you know, I can't guarantee that, you know, that what his fate is going to be, things like that. That's very interesting for a movie to have that type of a character in it, who's not the person who's, you know, who's not the protagonist.
Yeah. And you've got both of those things happening in this trailer. You've got the goofiness and you've got the seriousness,
but not with Thorin.
Yeah.
I don't think
don't have the goofiness with Thorin, but you've got that moment with Thorin and Gandalf. I think the characterization is going to lean toward what you're hoping for.
Right.
I don't know if it'll get there all the way, but I think it's going to lean toward what they're doing there.
Okay. That's what I'm hoping. Another thing that I picked out was no Smaug, which maybe that it's going to be in the second.
I didn't see much creature effects anywhere in that, and I think they probably just aren't at a place where they can show those yet.
Right.
Because they have that one kind of where you can kind of see the three the three trolls.
Trolls, yeah.
You know, well, you see like some of their leg, kind of. Uh-huh. But I didn't see much creature design, and maybe that goes back to what you're saying about the dwarves too, is that they're just not that close to being done. I mean, this is right. still a year away. Right. I'll tell you what I did like about the dwarves. By the way, speaking of the dwarves, is the song.
Yes,
here's this song. You know, this summer, this Christmas tentpole movie that's going to be, you know, this big epic adventure, and it's a trailer getting you ready for that movie. And what do? They stop in the middle of the trailer and sing a mournful,
a dirge, ballad,
a dirge, yeah. almost. Yeah, I mean, it's just. That's kind of bold. And I'm glad they've kept that, because they removed most all of the music from, or of the poetry rather, that's meant to be song,
right,
from Lord of the Rings. And I'm glad that they at least kept that, because, and that's an important part of the plot there, as far as when they get to that, where they're going to explain where they're going, they start singing, and they sing it to Bilbo rather than just telling him.
Right.
So, okay, well, we did actually have, you know, I put out a call on Facebook for a couple people to, if they wanted to join the conversation with us before we had the conversation, if they had any thoughts about the film. Mm-hmm. And we got two responses to
that.
We've got Bud Rogers, who's my friend and editor and partner in some projects. And Tim Barron, who's an artist, fantastic artist, that I've worked with on a couple of different things as well.
Yeah.
Let's just look at Bud's message here first, because it's interesting. He brought up two things that I didn't think of as I was watching it, and the one thing that I didn't think of is because of how perfect it is, and the other thing that I didn't think of, now I can't not think of it when I see the trailer. Here's what Bud said. Bud said, first impression, it's going to be a long wait until December. The trailer looks good, and it will fit in perfectly with Lord of the Rings. Martin Freeman has always had that Hobbit look to me, and he seems to be filling the role of Bilbo very well. But I have to admit, I'm a bit confused about what's going on with Gandalf and Galadriel. But I can go along for the ride. I'm really looking forward to seeing what Smaug will look like in this one. So first, Martin Freeman. I don't know. Are you familiar with Martin Freeman at all, Steve?
You know, he looks familiar. And I'm trying to pin him. I probably should have IMBD'd it.
He's from the British version of The Office. I don't know if you watch The Office, but the Jim character in the original British version is actually named Tim, and he played that part. Mm-hmm. And he does a really good job with it, where he's just that kind of self-conscious but smart alecky character. And he just does a good job with it. But he's also, did you see the film version of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
Yeah.
He's Arthur Dent.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And he's in the BBC's Sherlock Holmes series that they just did. He's Watson in the modern version, where they have, you know, Holmes and Watson in the modern day.
All right.
Find it really interesting. He's played three of the biggest, you know, pop culture literature characters from England with Dr. Watson,
right.
Arthur Dent, and at least from a geek standpoint, and then now Bilbo Baggins. So he's playing Bilbo Baggins, and when I've heard it was going to be him, he is perfect. I love him in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, even though he's not what I picture when I read the book, he's not what I picture when I listen to the story, and he's not what I picture, obviously, when I see the original BBC television miniseries, because...
Which rocked.
You're seeing the guy. But I always picture something more like a smaller framed John Cleese type of person. but he, you know, he inhabits that just very British sensibility that The Hobbit is supposed to have. And then with Watson, he does a great job too, and showed off his dramatic abilities. And now with The Hobbit, you know, in this trailer, you know, Bud mentions that he seems to be filling the role of Bilbo very well. Well, I didn't even notice how well it was, because I was watching. I was like, wow, this is great. And, you know, he's doing these hand motions and facial expressions that I noticed he used a lot in The Office.
All right.
You know, but, yeah. And then the other thing is this whole Gandalf and Galadriel thing. If you're watching this trailer,
yeah,
I don't know what this is meant to be.
I think, you know what? What I can only assume is
that Galadriel,
that Galadriel is very tender towards this being, which I don't know how much people listening know about the whole mythology of what goes into it. But basically, Gandalf and his people, the wizards, they're more like angels.
Yeah, I was just listening to something where Tolkien said that he actually, that's what he considers Gandalf to be.
Yeah.
And the wizards. The wizards and Gandalf are angels. They're not humans.
Yeah. And if you think of it that way, and this elven queen or whatever, she is tender towards him because she understands who he is, where he's coming from, you know, all that stuff. Whereas the hobbits have no idea. They're like, oh, he's a fun guy. He has, you know, fireworks in his back pocket and you know, he can do fun things and, you know, oh, look, what's this? He has a funny ring that can do something. I mean, it's just all like, you know, it's like this uncle, you know, when you're 5 years old and your uncle comes and pulls a quarter out of your ear and stuff like that. That's who you think he is if you're a hobbit. But Galadriel, she understands who he is. And I think that's what we're seeing is we're understanding.
I hope it's something like that, man, because the other thing is this is Gandalf the Grey. You know, he's Gandalf as he was at the beginning of The Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. And so he's not fully, like, realized his potential, I guess. And so he's a friend of elves, though. He's a, you know, he's well-traveled and he knows people and everything. And so I don't know, because he's, like, touching her hair. You know, and it could be, you could read so much into just this one little thing, and we'll have to wait and see what it's going to.
I think she was touching his hair.
Was it? Was it the other way around?
Yeah.
Well, either way, hair is being touched. long, curly hair is being caressed gently, you know, the way you would, you know, when you love someone and can't say anything. Yeah. I mean, that's what.
Well, that's interesting because you, when you're looking at movies, you're looking at motifs and you're looking at ways of storytelling and you're looking at shortcuts. And when it comes to things like that, obviously, if you have something in there like that, you're going to think that automatically.
Unless you give them reason not to.
Movies tell things in shortcuts like that. So, you know, because you see something like that, someone touches someone or someone glances at someone a certain way.
And we're drawn to the more extreme rather than the you know, the subtle friendships.
Right.
If you have a man and a woman on screen, you instantly assume.
Yeah.
Unless you're told for some reason or other that they're not. So, yeah,
well, for instance, one of the things that happened to me, I one of the reasons I couldn't be in the last episode was because it happened during a sleep schedule of mine because I took a night job. So I'm working 1 a.m. to 8 a.m. And one of the people there I know from a different place that I used to work at, and she was talking to another employee of hers, and she said, hey, do you know that new guy? And the person automatically assumed, since she's a woman and I'm a man, that he's like, well, are you interested in him? Do you like him? You know, automatically he jumps to that because it's a woman asking about a man. And, you know, that's how we assimilate things now. And movies, I mean, there are great facilitators of that because you only have 2 hours or 3.5 hours to tell this story. And you have to make shortcuts somewhere. You have to appeal to the culture in some way that they'll get it or the seed has been planted.
And this, obviously this is, we're talking about 2 seconds of, of film. So, I mean, there's a lot of context that we just have no idea what it is, but yeah. And now that Bud said that though, I can't not see it, you know, like it's just, you know, and then, you know, Bud echoed what you said about Smaug. He's looking forward to seeing what Smaug. But he says, I'm looking forward to seeing what Smaug will look like in the next one. And I wonder if he's talking about trailer or if he's talking about film. Or I think he's talking about trailer. But
well, is Smaug going to – I don't think Smaug is going to show up in the first.
Well, that's – you know, first let's get to Tim. Tim Barron says, hey, I checked it out and thought it looked great. I've never read the book all the way through. from what I could tell, it looked great, looked and felt like it belonged to the same family of the original trilogy. I was excited after watching it. So he's kind of getting into what I had said about it looks like it belongs in that familiar setting. He's never read the book, though. I find that interesting. You know, we're reading the book right now with my kids.
Right.
And reading it out loud as a family. And I'm excited because the timing for this is about perfect for my son to see this movie. He's not ready for Lord of the Rings. I have some friends who, they gave me a great paradigm to follow, which is when the child is old enough to read the Lord of the Rings, they'll be old enough to watch the movie. Right. And their son, he was just cranking through the books because he absolutely wanted to see the movies. And so he had to like just read and read and read. And he's, it's not easy to read these books. But that brings us to this whole thing of what this movie is going to be structured like. I'm recording. So we have two movies, one book, and I'm just really curious how this is going to work. I've heard that the first movie is just going to be The Hobbit, and the second movie is going to be a bridge between The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. So you've got this 3-hour movie that'll be just that book, and then all, because he's written so much backstory stuff. The Lost Tales, there's how many volumes of Lost Tales?
Right, yeah. And then you have the
things that he wrote that his son went and edited.
The Hurin book that came out a little bit while ago, a couple years ago.
That's good stuff, too.
The Silmarillion. If you wanted to get, you know, more science fiction-y in a more, a vein like that, where you have the gods and the goddesses and everything, you could do something like that. I mean, there's so much you could.
They're both going to be called The Hobbit, though.
That's the weird thing.
I don't think he's going to go backwards at all. But
what are you going to do that is? I mean, is he going to tell more stories of Bilbo?
I don't know. I'm wondering if it's going to be something more along the lines of the first movie is the journey to Smaug's cave, ending with the armies assembling for the war of the five armies at the end, and that the second movie would be the war of five armies and then getting characters back into place for, you know, in preparation for the Lord of the Rings.
See, that's, but, I mean, that's,
I don't know. It's interesting.
When I heard it was going to be two movies, I figured it was going to be the book cut up into two sections.
Well, and that's why I wondered, you know, when Bud said about, he's excited about seeing Smaug in the next one. That's why my mind instantly went to that. Okay, well, is he talking about movie or trailer? Because that's the second half of the book is, you know, they travel, they deal with orcs, they deal with trolls and spiders and stuff and elves. Then they deal with the dragon and, then have that huge war at the end.
Right.
It'll be interesting, but, and I trust Peter Jackson. I trust him as a storyteller now. And I understand when we're going from one medium to another medium, you have to make some changes.
Right.
But I'm just curious about this two-movie thing that they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't too far off the mark as far as Christmas themes go, based on your theory, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to share that with the class? Why this is an appropriate topic for Christmas time?
Well, because the Fellowship of the Rings, the Fellowship of the Ring, leaves Rivendell on December 25th, making almost. It obviously it's a Christmas movie.
Almost, except that they never mention that in the movie.
Yeah, well, I mean, why else would it be December 25th? Come on.
And December 25th means nothing in the context of that world, because Tolkien himself said this is a pre-Christian world.
Right, but thinking
this is all before Christ.
Thinking outside the box in a meta type of way, why would Tolkien, who lived 1900 years after Christ, make this start on December 25th? Random?
No, not random. But, you know, he's sure.
But you know, when you think about movies and when you think about stories and we think about things like that, it's funny because, you know, truth, people say truth is stranger than fiction, because if it happened in real life, it would be like, whoa, are you serious? It all happened on that day? What a coincidence. That's amazing. But if he had made a huge deal about it in the book, you know, and then they left on December 25th, which apparently is the same day that it would be like, oh, come on, now you're preaching. You know, so he puts this subtle little thing in there, and you can sort of tell because, you know, it's sort of a wink. And when you can do
It's a wink. I definitely give you that.
Yeah, when you can do that in literature, that's the way to do it. You know, you don't want to hammer someone over the head with it.
No, although it's interesting because you know, I've heard people say, how can a Christian watch and enjoy Star Trek based on the whole idea of, you know, Gene Roddenberry not, you know, thinking that a perfect future has no religion and having actually one of the characters, Captain Picard, saying outright, you know, this species has finally evolved past the need for a god, and then they think we're gods because we have this Arabian spaceship. I wonder how people can read Lord of the Rings and, you know, ignore just this deep-seated, and maybe it's because it's so deep-seated and deeply rooted, but this deep-seated and deep-rooted Christian worldview that's behind it.
Right.
And it's not, he's not Lewis, you know, he's not saying anything like, you know, well, Aslan is me writing a story about what would Christ be like if it was a world of animals, you know?
Right.
He's not doing that, and he doesn't do that. But there's such things, there's very interesting things that can be found, especially if you start, like, digging into it. And I can't see how someone can worship these books the way some people do and turn that part off.
Right. So, yeah, it's amazing.
But okay, so it was nice talking to you, Steve. And
that was good.
And Merry Christmas.
Yeah, you guys have a happy one too.
And Merry Christmas to all our strangers and aliens out there.
And Jace, Dr. J, you have a good one.
That's right. You didn't get to wish him a Merry Christmas.
That's right.
And just quickly, I do want to mention our Facebook page that you can always go to and find us and join in the conversation with us. That Facebook page is facebook.com/... I don't even know.
Just put strangers and aliens in the search engine. It'll find it for you.
Yeah, it'll get there. Yeah. But our website is strangersandaliens.com. And you can leave comments on our posts. You can leave comments on Dr. Jace's lists of Christmas stories.
Incredibly wrong list, yeah.
You weren't there yesterday for it. I guess it was 2 days ago. You weren't there. You can't comment. Steve,
oh, believe me, the comments are coming.
but yeah, you can comment there. I do want to make one just quick little note here. If you do comment and it's your first time ever commenting, our spam bot detector makes us approve that, and so it might take a little bit for it to appear, just because we have to, you know, we notify it and that you've left a message, and we have to check it. All right, well, talk with you later, Steve.
All right, God bless you guys.
And Godspeed.
Oh, the greatest adventure is all yours to take.
I thought we agreed no singing.